In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. This is the I Spy Radio Show. So glad you're joining us. As every week, we help you keep an eye on big government. Except this week, we're taking a break from the usual, politics, policies, analysis, and other investigations. This week, we're bringing you something that I'd be willing to bet that at least 95%, maybe even 99% of you have never heard about. Today, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Essenes, the mysterious Jewish sect that wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, of course you've heard about the Dead Sea Scrolls, but they are not just copies of the books of the Bible. There's many other scrolls and books in there. But what I'm really willing to bet that most of you probably don't know much about is the Essenes themselves, who wrote the scrolls, hid them, and then pretty much disappeared from history. For example, you probably have not heard about the Essenes' uncannily accurate prophecies. You probably haven't heard about their unique and sacred calendar. In fact, they considered the Jewish calendar, based on a lunar cycle, to be an abomination. You probably have not heard that the Essenes correctly predicted the year the Messiah would arrive, a prediction recorded among those scrolls at least 2 centuries before he did. You probably have not heard that they predicted to the day when Israel would return as a nation after its dispersal by the Romans. And if you extrapolate out their sacred calendar, they even know when the world will end, approximately. To explore all this, I'd like to welcome Dr. Ken Johnson to the show. Ken is a Dead Sea Scroll scholar and researcher, the author of 33 of his own books. He is also a frequent guest on Prophecy Watchers and a well-known lecturer speaking on such topics as Bible prophecy and history and, of course, on the Dead Sea Scrolls. Ken, it is great to talk to you.
It's great to be on the program.
So before we get to the Essenes, though, let's dig a little into the scrolls themselves. Some of the scrolls, most people know that they were discovered in 1947 by accident by a shepherd who threw a rock into a cave and heard pottery shatter. The shepherd then took some of those scrolls with him, eventually getting in contact with a Jewish professor who took them home to examine them, which just happened to be on the very day that the UN voted in favor of the Holy Land partition. In fact, he was examining these scrolls, which hadn't been read by Jewish eyes in some 1900 years, while listening to the radio about the UN vote. I mean, that is just absolutely miraculous. And I'm sure that you've probably been struck over and over how the hand of God has just been all over these scrolls on so many levels.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, if you listen to this, the story of how they came to be, how they fell into Jewish hands, and at the exact same day that Israel became a nation, It's interesting to go back and plug that into Isaiah 29, which talks about Israel coming back for the second time, which would be 1948. And at that time, the old ones would start speaking out of the dust of the earth. So I believe that to be a prophecy of the scrolls. And it really is timely because today we have, well, for the past 2,000 years, we've had Judaism that teaches one thing: Jesus is not Messiah, it doesn't work that way, etc. And now we find Dead Sea Scrolls, which are put together by the Essenes that date 1 to 200 BC, so before there's any Christians, giving the same theology as Christians do. And they say, no, that is the way it's always been. These guys are cults, not us. And so it's an interesting thing.
So talk to us a bit about the inventory of the scrolls, what we have. As I understand it, they can be divided roughly into biblical, non-biblical, which would include things like the apocryphal works like Enoch and the Book of Giants, and then also the Testaments of the Patriarchs, which is a whole other topic all by itself, commentary and sectarian categories. Am I missing a category there?
I think that's pretty good. About 60% of them are just copies of Scripture. And that's really nice to know that the oldest scriptures we used to have is about 1,000 AD.
Right.
And so now you have not any whole book, but major sections of the books that date back to 200 to 300 BC. Right. So over 1,000 years earlier.
Right.
So it just shows the scriptures haven't been tampered with. So that in itself is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then you've got the commentary. Just like if you went to a Baptist church or a Methodist church or something like that, you'd be using the Bible like we all do, but you have the doctrinal statement of your denomination, what you believe, and that might, maybe my denomination disagrees with you. And so that's why you've got Pharisees and Sadducees and Essenes. But it's interesting to get how they get heated against each other.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure we'll come back to that. So on the biblical set of scrolls, there are partial or complete copies of every book in the Hebrew Bible, except the book of Esther. But some of these were written in ancient Paleo-Hebrew or First Temple Hebrew. Is the fact that they're in Paleo-Hebrew significant in some way?
Yeah, it helps to date everything. What's interesting about that, a lot of people will say, well, maybe Esther's not supposed to be in the canon. Well, the other extra-biblical books talk about what's supposed to be in the canon, and it has the same list as we do of 39 books.
Hmm.
So the fact that Esther was not there or one of the minor prophets or something like that doesn't really mean anything. It just means we haven't found it yet.
Now, that they're in the Paleo-Hebrew, does it mean that those scrolls that are in that text, does that mean they dated back to the First Temple, that those were the original scrolls, or does it just mean that they didn't want to alter the language that was there?
It's probably safe to say they were copies, but close to the original. So as any language changes, you're going to have difference in spelling and different things like that, and you can begin to date when it was written. But you should always say it's at least as old as, rather than trying to put it at exact point.
Right.
You know, like for instance, to give an example, somebody might say, well, the King James Bible is obviously fake because it's supposed to be, if you read Exodus, the actual travels of the Hebrews in 15th century BC, but we know the Hebrews didn't use 16th century English. You know, it's like, well, it's a translation,
right,
you know,
right.
But it could be very accurate.
So as far as the non-biblical apocryphal scrolls, broadly speaking, what types of works are these, and what are some of the more interesting or unique apocryphal books that are among the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Well, the basic idea is that they have the temple library, and there was the School of the Prophets. And the School of the Prophets basically dictated everything. And the story basically goes from Adam to Aaron. Was a series of prophets, and they all left their last will and testament, if you will. Lots of morality, lots of good stories, and lots of prophecy. And they always talked about a Messiah who would come and die for them and that would somehow reconcile them to God. And so the story is consistent all the way through. And then you get to the time of Aaron and Moses, and then Moses actually begins writing Genesis and on up. So the Old Testament, Genesis would be the oldest book or one of the oldest books, and that would date back from about 1500 BC, more or less, going forward. So they're saying we've had lots of history. The main piece that you want to focus on is what we would call the Old Testament. And people wonder why, but if you had to read a library of 10,000 books in order to figure out how to be saved, people wouldn't even try.
Right, right.
You know, so you've got tons and tons of extra biblical writings, but as far as salvation goes, we focus on the Old and the New Testament.
Right.
But they have a lot of extra stuff, just genealogies, histories, their theology, what they believed, and prophecies. Even when you go to people like Josephus and first century historians, they all say that the Essenes were known to have double lifespans because of their herbal medicine. They were known to be 100% accurate prophets. The people loved them and hated the Pharisees and Sadducees, and there was this civil war that began at one point.
Right.
So it's a really interesting history.
It is an interesting history. In fact, that's where I'd like to go next. So everyone stay with us. Lots more with Dr. Ken Johnson, a Dead Sea Scroll expert. And coming up, we're going to be talking about more about the people behind the scrolls, the Essenes. And welcome back. We're talking today with Dr. Ken Johnson. He is a researcher, lecturer, and the author of 33 books. He's an expert on the Dead Sea Scrolls, which is our focus today. And you can visit his website at BibleFacts.org, BibleFacts.org. And we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Just look for show 1248. And so, Dr. Johnson, if you could talk to us a little bit about the Essenes, how they came to be, the split that occurred in the priesthood, and how it is that they ended up in the desert.
Well, basically, you have Jews, and then you have the history ending with Ezra, and then you have what we usually call the 400 silent years, mm-hmm. and then it starts off with Matthew. And it is an interesting story because when the Old Testament closes, Jews were Jews, they were just brothers. When Matthew opens up, there's Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, and all these groups, and they're trying to kill each other. And so, like, what happened?
Right.
And, of course, the answer is, we don't know. And, of course, it's because they don't want to tell us. Hmm. And so then the Dead Sea Scrolls come along, and it gives us a complete history. Basically, the Jews were Jews. They had these prophecies that the Judaism basically would apostatize, much like we know that Christianity will toward the second coming. And basically they said, we have always taught one Messiah, two comings. He comes to die for our sins. He comes back and sets up a millennial reign. Here's the history. Here's the theology. Here's the prophecy. But then somebody apostatizes and begins to change things. And so the history is that there's this civil war that occurred. And in the Damascus Covenant, the community rule, it actually talks about the fact that they left, they went to Egypt until the prophecy of Daniel 9 would be fulfilled, that Rome would come in and stabilize. Rome came in and said, I don't care what you worship, you move to attack somebody, we shoot you. And that created a type of peace. And they moved back in and began to lead a revival. And they said that someone from their order would fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah about a voice crying in the wilderness, preparing the way of Messiah. John the Baptist said that he was that person. We have church father documents, ancient church documents that actually say the people that ran the school of the prophets from Moses' time up to Christian time. And so we have documented evidence now that John the Baptist did run the school of the prophets, and he was an Essene, and it fulfilled that prophecy.
In terms of what the Pharisees believed, because it seems like they believed very differently in terms of the Messiah, correct? Did they believe in any Messiah, or just that he was much more of a political, was supposed to be a political leader versus someone that would come and sacrifice his life and give us forgiveness?
Yeah, actually, the Sadducees didn't believe in much of anything. They thought once you're dead, so it doesn't matter. The Pharisees kind of were believers. They believed in God and a heaven and a hell and this kind of stuff and the Messiah coming. But they changed the story to a Messiah being a political leader, a general that would rise up and free them from Rome and put them into power, that kind of thing. And the Essenes basically came along and said, that's not the way that it's always been taught. The Messiah comes to die for our sins. So the Pharisees said, well, we know that we're correct because we have this oral Torah,
right?
Secret oral traditions handed down by Moses to us. And the Essenes said, that's got to be fake because we have written testaments of our patriarchs. And that tells us that we're right. And it would be an in-house debate, except as a Christian, I believe the New Testament. And if you compare the New Testament to those two, it agrees completely with the Essene order and disagrees with the Pharisee order.
So as far as the Testament of the Patriarchs are concerned, I remember you giving other interviews, and you said that pretty much everybody believed that the Testaments, they were real, and they had existed at one time, but the Pharisee says the ones that you have aren't real. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, that's true, and that's logical. Things get lost with time, but if your great-grandfather was a prophet with Isaiah and wrote a book of prophecy, I don't think you would accidentally lose it. And so it's an interesting thing like that. But again, if you believe the New Testament, that the Messiah comes to die for our sins, start the age of grace, these kind of things, and that's in the testaments of the patriarchs, it kind of proves it, because there's no way they could make up a fake set of testaments and get the theology perfect with the New Testament mm-hmm. a few hundred years before the New Testament was written. We could have copied from them, but they can't copy from us. Since we have the same story, that would lead you to believe that the testaments of the patriarchs are actually real, and that the Pharisee oral Torah has been tampered with to a certain point. And that's why we have a lot of Jews now, a good large messianic group, that more and more they're coming to the Messiah because they've been taught to ignore Christians and the Bible and just focus on the Old Testament, the Torah. And then the scrolls come along and they give the story, the same story about this. For instance, my favorite scroll is 11Q13, and it talks about Messiah being God incarnate, dying for our sins, paying for our sin nature, starting the age of grace. And it actually says that event would be one Shemitah after the end of the ninth jubilee of the eighth Ona. So that's their calendar, and that comes out to be 32 AD.
Right.
So if it wasn't Jesus, who was it? The Messiah came, God said he would, so it had to have happened. So a lot of people are beginning to really stop and think about this.
Well, absolutely, and I'd like to come back to that 32 AD a little bit, but in terms of that intervening 400-some years, you mentioned that the Essenes went down to Egypt and then they came back. What did the everyday Jewish people think of the Essenes? And it must have been kind of odd to have them on one side and the Pharisees on the other and everybody trying to kill each other. I mean, these are your priests, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, to a point. I mean, like you and I living here in America, you know there's Catholics, you know there's Baptists, you know there's Pentecostals. You might like one and not like the other, might think one of them's a cult and not the other, but you know about them. Everybody knows about Catholics and because they're just all around. So it's the same way. You have three major denominations and then a whole bunch of little ones. So everybody knew about the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes. And the people basically hated the Sadducees and the Pharisees and loved the Essenes. The Sadducees basically said, if you're not a Sadducee, we don't want to even talk with you. They were very uppity, you know, cliquish. The Pharisees said, if you're Jewish, we love you. Come and talk to us. We want to convert you, you know. But if you're a Gentile, don't bother us. Your Gentiles are not saved. We don't care about them. The Essenes, on the other hand, said, hey, you want to talk about Messiah and prophecy? Let's do lunch. I don't care if you're male or female, Jew or Gentile. Unless, of course, they were doing priestly stuff. Then they can't be touched and all that. But when they're not on duty as a priest in a temple, they just talk about things.
Well,
they were known to be the herbal medicine, a double lifespan. So when you look at these things, here's a group of people that's supposed to be 100% accurate prophets. They live incredibly long. They're always healthy. And then you get these other people that are always trying to yell at you because you didn't wear your clothes right.
Yeah.
And that's a sin or whatever.
Yeah.
So everybody began to think, yeah, important things are important. And most of the people is sided with the Essenes.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. Okay, we do need to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll continue with Dr. Ken Johnson talking about the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the I Spy Radio Show. We're talking today with Dr. Ken Johnson. He's a researcher and lecturer and the author of 33 books. You can find a lot of those books there at his website, BibleFacts.org. And we're talking today about the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls. And just to go back a little bit to what you had said in that last segment, you're talking about that the Essenes, there had been this kind of 400 years of silence that we had thought, and then lo and behold, the Dead Sea Scrolls come forward. And now we have a much better picture of what was going on. And also with that prophecy about the voice crying in the wilderness and John the Baptist really fulfilling that role, did Jesus himself ever visit the Essenes? And if he did, do we know whether he proclaimed himself to be the Messiah and or did they proclaim him to be the Messiah?
Yeah, there's actually a couple of records in the scrolls talking about when the Messiah visited Qumran. There's one incident that was interesting. He was preaching probably on a Yom Kippur or something. It was a holy day of some sort. And representatives from the priesthood in Jerusalem came down to arrest him. And that's really a bad idea. Rome is saying, cool it. And Essenes are always heavily armed. And you're coming into their headquarters to try to arrest what they think is the Messiah. And it didn't go too well. Well, it's an interesting story because we remember the Mount of Transfiguration where Jesus all of a sudden shone and he was there with Moses and Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
According to them, he was teaching and they came to arrest him and he just flat manifested in that same way and they left. And so it was interesting. Nobody shot anybody or anything like that, but they were going to arrest him and they the Essenes were, no, you're not, and Jesus kind of fixed it. So it's interesting. They accepted him as Messiah, which makes sense, even if you just look at a few of the prophecies. There's a guy named Yeshua, based on Isaiah. He comes at a certain point, based on Daniel 9. He's born in Bethlehem, and it just goes on and on. And just five or six of those, you can figure out who Messiah is.
Right.
So we were talking about the whole idea of, you know, how would you know? And just looking at these prophecies, it's really interesting. If you thought, okay, I'm going to be an Essene, and maybe your partner's going to be a Pharisee, and somebody else is going to be a Sadducee or something like that, that's fine. I can see that. But when the Messiah comes and does what he does, raises the dead, it should be obvious. You should be able to say, I was right, or, hey, I'm in the wrong denomination, and I'm going to change.
Right.
And it should be not a problem, but when these people decide, I don't care what the facts are, I'm going to stick with my denomination and I'm going to kill anybody that says the opposite.
Yeah.
That's really bad apostasy.
Yeah, it is. And boy, does that echo today in many ways, is ignore the evidence of your own eyes and ears, believe what we tell you instead. As far as these scenes go, did they ever make appearances in the gospel?
There's a few places. Yeah, actually, Paul talked about he's a follower of the Way, which they consider a heresy. And the Way was the name of the group, the original group, as far as the Essenes are concerned. So, and Christians were first called followers of the Way in Antioch. So there's a lot of little comments like that, or things that go together. In one part, he's talking about this, and you have to follow the idea of the Way, and then the scribes. So there's several things in there like that that would kind of connect you up on them. But at one place in Acts, it talks about people, well, prophets basically coming down from Antioch, and one of them was an Essene, and it's mentioned there in Acts. I forget his name now off the top of my head, but you can go back and look up the history of how he worked with Hillel and Shammai back in the time, became a believer in Messiah, and was still around. It had been about, he would have to be about 90 at that point, but with a 120-year lifespan, he was coming down. And he actually anointed and prayed for Paul, according to the book of Acts. Hmm. So that's one famous scene that's in Acts.
Well, as far as after the Messiah came, having listened to you previously, we know that the Essenes essentially gave up their solitary life there in the desert and became the early church, the early Christians. And so, of course, they left Qumran. Getting back to the scrolls, though, for a moment, do we know why those scrolls were hidden away? Were they purposefully trying to leave those for future generations, or was that just, you know, how scrolls were stored at the time?
Well, probably both. Especially if you plug in Isaiah 29 about when Israel comes back, then the old ones would begin to speak. It can't be a coincidence that somebody happens to find scrolls that have been sitting there for 2,000 years and nobody happens to have noticed them. And this is the very day that Israel becomes a state. So the whole thing is designed by God for this purpose, for us to understand true theology, for Israel to come to knowledge of Messiah. And yeah, it's interesting because they talked about how when you get toward the end of an age, things get really bad. There's a lot of persecutions, and you have to, you know, keep preaching the gospel, but you have to do it in a very smart way. And so they had all these kind of rules laid out, and they were going to stick with these rules until the Messiah actually came, and then things would be different. And it was really interesting to see how that works. So they'd leave some of the scrolls for future generations. I honestly believe somewhere there is a full temple library, because you wouldn't just leave the only copy out in a cave somewhere.
Yeah,
I wouldn't anyway. So I'm sure they took some of them with them.
Yeah, you sure wouldn't think so. Okay, let's take a break a little bit early. Coming back, we're going to be talking some more with Dr. Ken Johnson about the Essenes, their calendar, and their prophecies. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're taking a deep dive into the Essenes. They are the people who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, and we're doing that with Dr. Ken Johnson. He is a researcher, lecturer, and author of 33 books. You can visit his website at BibleFacts.org. And so we've been talking about the Essenes here, and I'd like to really switch to kind of a really huge topic for them, which is their calendar. They have what they called the real calendar. It was a solar calendar as opposed to the lunar calendar that the Pharisees switched to and is still in use today. And if I have it right, the Essenes calendar was 360 days plus four bonus days, so to speak, for the solstices, a total of 364 days in a year, and would always start on the Wednesday closest to the spring solstice. Is that about right for, as far as summaries go?
Yeah, the years are the same. And it's the same calendars in the Bible, like the 14th of Nisan is Passover. Mm-hmm. So all that's the same. It's just when you start. And they said that you were supposed to start. It's a 364-year day, or day-year, rather. So that means it's divisible evenly in sevens. So everything always comes out the same. And it's really neat, because if you're looking at Moses or Jesus and something happened on this day, and then 3 days later something happened, you'd instantly know if it was a Sabbath, what day of the week it was, when it, how close it was to other things. You just always know. And then all of a sudden, lots of stuff pops yes. in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but because the scripture doesn't have any filler. When it says it was the third day after this event, that's important. You're supposed to know what that means. And so, yeah, it was a 364-day calendar. And they'd have a leap week once every 5 to 6 years, and that would keep the Sabbaths all in line.
Right. So, and also within that, you mentioned everything was sevens, and within that, they also believed that the world was seven 1,000-year cycles. So seven sets of those. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the years, the concept of the Messiah coming at the year 4,000 and the millennial reign starting, the 1,000-year millennial reign starting at the year 6,000. The same thing has been talked about by the early church fathers and by lots of people, but mm-hmm. we're always like, well, approximately, because we don't have a calendar. You know, like ours is, right now it's 2022 AD. So if that's correct, Jesus came, was born rather, 2,022 years ago. But most likely, if he was born in 2 BC or 1, you know, it's probably off slightly. And so we have the same kind of questions on those things. But they were very accurate. They said, no, it's you start from creation, you count forward, the day is the day. And like I said, in 11Q13, they said the Messiah would be the event where he would take away our sin, would occur one Shemitah, which is a 7-year period, after the end of the ninth Jubilee of that Unah, which is the eighth Unah. Of the second age. So you plug that into the calendar the way they do it, it comes out to be 32 AD, and all the dates match real well.
So I remember a Prophecy Watchers episode where you had brought in what looked like a little bit like a sundial.
Yes.
And I'll have to dig up that that episode, put it on our website. But at any rate, was the Essenes calendar explicitly described within the scrolls, or was it something that had to be worked out from among several scrolls?
It's actually very specific. The only question was the leap year or the leap week system, whatever kind of system they had. And the leap system wasn't mentioned, but the whole point was you don't drift the start of your year from the spring to the fall to the winter. You know, you'd lose years. You always keep it relatively close.
Mm-hmm.
And they had whole calendars that went 5 and 6 years with no extra days in them. So there's no leap days. There has to be a leap something. And so it was figured out that it's a leap week. And there's still a little bit of division on exactly what year has the leap week in it, that kind of thing. And so, but it's interesting for our purposes. We're not trying to go do Yom Kippur rituals on the right date, for instance. But we're just trying to figure out prophecy in those sets. And so within the year, it's pretty specific.
So as far as this notion that they were able to prophesy to the year when the Messiah would be there, 32 AD, I mean, that's astronomical. I mean, because we know that these were made at least 200 some years before Jesus came along. I mean, that's massive news. Why does this not make headlines everywhere, for heaven's sakes?
That's a really good question. I have no clue, other than that some people don't want to hear that kind of stuff. So it's interesting to me because you have the Roman, like Pliny, Tacitus, you've got Josephus and other places that talk about the Essenes being herbal medicine, you know, long life, and extremely accurate prophets, 100% accurate prophets. Because if you weren't, you're put to death. If you're a 99% prophet, then you're put to death because you're a false prophet. But these guys, you know, consistently told the same stories in the scrolls over and over again. They've got whole commentaries on like Habakkuk and some of the minor prophets. I remember looking at Nahum thinking, okay, it's all about that one event. It has nothing to do with me because there's no prophecy for my time in it. So Nahum's not something I ever really go back and study. Boy, was I wrong.
Mm.
You look at the commentary in the scrolls and they begin to explain how to interpret the prophecies. It's really amazing.
Yes. And I've heard you talk about that one. We only got about a minute here in this segment with you. As I recall, since the time of the Essenes, the Jewish religious leaders have further corrupted, you know, actually, let me save that one for the next one. Could you explain to us a little bit about how the impact of that, the Essenes calendar, affected their view of the Pharisees? Because the Pharisees, they called the sons of darkness.
Right. Yeah. They had special names for Pharisees and Sadducees because of the things that they did. But one thing that set the Pharisees apart is that they wanted to follow this lunar calendar. And there's a prophecy in Jubilees and a couple of other books about at a certain point, apostasy would hit. And one of the marks of the apostasy would be them switching from a solar calendar to a lunar calendar. And so when they did, they started calling the Pharisees the sons of darkness.
Hmm.
And that language is used all the way through the New Testament, the sons of light, yes, and the sons of darkness.
Yes. Okay, let's take a break there. Coming back, we'll be talking some more about that calendar. We're doing that with Dr. Ken Johnson. He is a Dead Sea Scroll scholar. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Dr. Ken Johnson. He's a Dead Sea Scroll scholar. That's kind of a tongue twister. You can find out more about him by heading to BibleFacts.org. He lists some of his books there. He's got 33 in total. And, you know, we've been talking about this calendar that I find to be so fascinating because it has been so accurate down through the years. And as we discussed in that last segment there, that they predicted to the year that the Messiah would appear in 32 AD. And then, of course, we talked about the corruption that the Pharisees caused when they switched to a lunar calendar. As I recall, since the time of the Essenes, the Jewish religious leaders have further corrupted the calendar centuries after Jesus arrived to try to claim that, see, the dates are off, so that couldn't have been him. Do I have that right, and can you comment on that?
Yeah, actually, that's mentioned in the scrolls, but it's also mentioned in other history works, too. Basically, there was a Jewish history work on the Pharisee side called the Seder Olam. Even the Talmud will quote it and say that it is accurate. But it's a guy that tried to use just the Bible and the rabbis and fill in the gaps and create a chronology. We've got a translation of it. But the interesting thing about it is it actually says that Messiah came. And he has an accurate date. The dates come up. They agree with the Dead Sea Scrolls. But he basically says there was a rabbi named Yoshi in the first or second century somewhere, and he wanted to make sure people didn't misunderstand Daniel 9. And he said Daniel 9 is not from the going forth of the command to rebuild the temple and Jerusalem to the death of the Messiah. It's from the destruction of the first temple to the destruction of the second temple, which messes everything up.
Sure.
And so he came up with a chronology and basically was laughed out. It's like there's no way you could do that. You know, he said Hashuerus, Darius, and Cyrus were just titles, and they're all the same guy. So he's trying to take a 250-year time period and run it down to 25 years. And you just can't do that. Too many other history things. So he came back with a second theory on how to manipulate the numbers, and again was told, go away. But then 100, 150 years later, all of a sudden, that's in there. And so that's why you see from the Dead Sea Scroll calendar to the Pharisee calendar, or the modern Jewish calendar, is 167 years off. And we created a website just for the calendar, dsscalendar.org. It'll show you Gregorian, Dead Sea Scroll, and Jewish, and have some study guides and stuff there.
So I would think that, because you had mentioned the Messianic Jews that are kind of waking up to the Essenes and what their beliefs were and the split from the Pharisees, to hear you talk about how they manipulated that calendar purposefully to try to hide the fact that Jesus was, in fact, the Messiah, who did, in fact, come in the very year that he was prophesied, I would think they'd be extremely angry that all of these centuries that the Jewish religious leaders have been purposely keeping the Messiah away from their people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, several of them have said, we've been lied to. I've got a couple of Jewish friends that aren't Christian, and they're not going to become Christian. They're exploring other things like Kabbalah and other stuff, but they all say the same thing. Something's wrong. We have been lied to by somebody. Because you can't have great-granddad say one thing and granddad say the opposite. Somebody's lying, and I don't know who, but I don't want to mess with it. So it's having an impact on people.
Well, I would certainly think so, and I know that if I was in that situation, I'd be extremely upset. And getting back to some of their prophecies, you know, 32 AD, that has to do with Easter, and of course we're coming into the Christmas season. Were there any prophecies from the Essenes about Jesus being born and when that would occur?
Not specifically in the scrolls that I can think of. There's a few things about that, though. Just pulling the things out from like Isaiah and the other places, he'd be born in Bethlehem, it would be at a certain time. There'd be a star that marks the birth. They did talk about the star, you know, marking the birth and things like that. Not anything really specific. They have a whole lot of extra biblical prophecy, and most of it focuses on the first coming. And there's just a few things for the second coming, but it's really neat to see the whole thing in order, all the prophecies, the theology matching with the New Testament, and then going a step further and saying, now, if this is real, this is how you want to live your life, and this is why. And just very, very practical. It's really amazing.
Yes, it really is. So just to come back around to the calendar, which has those 1,000-year cycles that we mentioned, and just to be clear, that's according to the Essenes that the whole of the Earth's existence is supposed to be 7,000 years total. So looking forward then, we could backtrack 1,000 years to allow for the millennial reign. Does that mean we have a pretty fair idea of when the rapture might occur and when the Messiah's second coming would be? Do we know about when that is?
Yeah, according to the calendar, it'd be 2075 AD. But the thing with that is, if you look at the first coming, the end of that age was 75 AD, and you've got Jesus being born in 2 BC, the church age starting in 32, the destruction of the Jerusalem temple in 70, the Alexandrian temple in 73, then the end of the age in 75, and then you had a Bar Kokhba rebellion, which actually ended everything in 135. So it's like a 150-year time period of lots of different things happening in that time period. So I'm assuming the same thing with us. So the end of the age properly is March of 2075, and I'm sure that's the beginning of the next age. But either on that date or sometime before would be a second coming, because we assume the second coming would be then. But what if there's a seven-year tribulation period, the Lord comes back, and then what if he has us to do something with building the temple, rather than him just snapping his fingers and it's done? So what if there's 10, 20, or 30 years in between or after his second coming to the dedication of the temple, and the dedication of the temple might be in 2075.
Right.
So you don't want to make assumptions, but you do want to focus on it. 2075, March of that year, is a very, very pivotal time. And it's been exactly 2,000 years since the church age started in 2032, so just, you know, another 10 years from now.
Right.
So there's lots of interesting things that would start. The scrolls do talk about the last jubilee period, or the last generation. A lot of prophecies would happen. So that'll be from 2025 to 2075. So there's a lot of things happening there. Maybe not much of anything will happen in the next couple of years, but I'm really looking for a lot of prophecies, and there's quite a few in the scrolls and in the Old Testament that still have to be fulfilled.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and talk about prophecies in our last segment here with you. Everyone stay with us. We'll be right back with Ken Johnson. And we're back. We're in our final segment now with Dr. Ken Johnson. He is a Dead Sea Scrolls scholar, and he has 33 books out there. In fact, you know, while we're talking books and with Christmas coming up, if somebody wanted to kind of get a good introduction, a good grounding in the Dead Sea Scrolls, sort of an overview look, which of your books would you recommend?
Oh, I just came out with one called The New Covenant of Damascus that talks a lot about their theology and how it relates to the New Testament and their history, but also the ancient testaments of the patriarchs, just to know how they interpreted and why. Those would probably be two really good books.
Well, since you mentioned the patriarchs, and we're definitely going to have you back, and I'd like to dig more into the patriarchs, but just to kind of flesh that out a little bit, because, you know, it's one thing, you know, not having heard about the Essenes' incredible calendar and their incredible prophecies that were so accurate, but the other thing that really gets lost in the Dead Sea Scrolls are these testaments of the patriarchs. And so, as you had said previously, they were kind of like the last will and testament, kind of what the knowledge that they would want to pass on to the next generation. And supposedly, these went all the way back to Adam. I can't imagine reading the words of Adam. That would be so astonishing to do that. And of course, that one's missing. But what are some of the ones that we do have?
Yeah, actually, there's Josephus quotes a very small piece of the Testament of Adam about him knowing that the world would be destroyed once by flood and once by fire, but he didn't know which one would come first. So it's really interesting. There's little, once you know what you're looking for, there's little pieces of them all over in the ancient writings. But from Adam through Aaron, they were all prophets. God talked with them, and they would write a last will and testament to their kids. And they talked a lot about prophecy. One of the things that was over and over again is that the Jews would apostatize, the Messiah would be put to death, but this actually would be, you know, part of our salvation. But one thing is interesting. In the Testament of Aaron, that would be Moses' brother. Just think about that for a minute. So Moses' brother, the first Aaronic priest, in his last will and testament, he mentioned that he knows, according to the prophecy, that the fathers, that you would apostatize. He's talking to his kids generations down. So the only thing he could tell them is that if you want to be in God's grace, you personally, listening to me and reading this testament, have nothing to do with the nails. And then, of course, it's fragmented. And, of course, I'm sure everybody would be like, I have no idea what he's talking about. But as a Christian, yeah, if you're on the priesthood and you know the Messiah is here and they're wanting to nail him to a cross or to a piece of wood, have nothing to do with the nails.
Wow.
That's amazing to have, you know, if these are correct, Moses' brother saying something like that. And it's amazing, the testaments, you know, from Enoch and Enos and Adam and these things. The Testament of Noah has got some amazing prophecy in it.
Well, and for Aaron to be saying that too, you know, crucifixion wasn't even around then. So for him to be mentioning nails, that's just so completely out of the blue, and yet it was so true.
Yeah, I don't know anything before his that said that, but obviously something did. And if he would have said crucifixion, that would be very fishy.
Right.
Because it never existed yet.
Right, right.
But for him to say they do this weird thing where they pierce a guy with nails, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So getting back to the calendar a little bit, and the Essenes had morphed into Christianity in the early church, but they still had that calendar that said there was another 2,000 some years to go before the end of days. So why is it that the early church, so much of what we read, they kind of kept saying, well, Christ is going to return any moment, Christ is going to return any moment. How did the Essenes prophecies, or the calendar anyway, about that 2,000 years, how did that get lost to the early church?
I don't think it did really so much. We read it in American, with American eyes, so to speak.
Oh, good point.
I've got a list of about 6 or 8 or 10 church fathers that said, obviously, the Messiah will come back 2,000 years after he left. You know, and they're talking, you know, anywhere from 32 to 75, whatever, but about 2,000 years of a church age. And so they were really expecting to go further out. But one of the things is you've got to realize that there's an end of an each age. There's four ages. So when they're talking about the end times, the end of days, in a lot of the scrolls, they're talking about 75 AD. The destruction of the Pharisee, the birth of the church age, the birth of the age of grace, when things will be much better. that's their, you know, amazing time, and that's what they're focusing on and waiting for. And we're doing the same thing. We're talking about the end of the age, the end of the world, you know, when the Lord comes back. No, it's going to be another 1,000 years, a millennial reign. It's not the end, but it's the end of our age. And right. So the language is like that a lot.
I see. So in the minute and a half or so that we've got here, actually the minute that we have left with you, are there some key prophecies for the end times that have yet to be fulfilled that the Essenes specifically zeroed in on?
Yeah, actually, they focused a lot with the apostasy. Mm. They talked about how the lifespans shorten, diseases creep in, and it's because of the wickedness of our generation. And they talked about how we need to have in every church, every synagogue of the Gentiles has to have a good pastor, someone skilled in Bible prophecy, and someone skilled in herbal medicine. And it's very important we take care of each other in these last days.
Isn't that something? That sounds so much, so accurate, actually, for what we do need for today. Dr. Ken Johnson, I want to thank you so much for your time, and we're definitely going to have you back.
Oh, thank you. I'll look forward to that.
Since this show is airing over Thanksgiving weekend, we're going to re-air this one more time closer to Christmas. And speaking of Christmas, be sure to visit Dr. Ken Johnson's website, BibleFacts.org. His books would make very unique gifts. And just to highlight a few, he's got the Testament of the Patriarchs, a book on the Dead Sea Scroll calendar, Ancient Mysteries of the Essenes. He has ancient translation work and books on topics like fallen angels and end time prophecies. And of course, visit our website, iSpireRadio.com. We're going to have a lot of links this week to further build out your knowledge about the Dead Sea Scrolls. You know, it's astounding to me, listening to Dr. Ken, how then, as now, the leaders of society, rather than admit that they were wrong, instead worked to keep people in the dark about the good news, that the Messiah had arrived, exactly as predicted. But the leaders couldn't stand being challenged for fear of losing their power. So they willfully lied, attempted to rewrite history and change the data, the dates, to make it fit their narrative, even creating their own fake news. All that to keep the good news hidden from their own people, that God had fulfilled his promise. We're in the holiday season now, and it's my sincere hope and prayer that today's show touched you and helped you believe even more in the good news of God's promise. Society wants you to believe there isn't evidence, just like those 400 years of silence between the Old and New Testaments. No, it was just being hidden from you. Well, blessed are they who believe. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a faith that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a faith that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.